everybody. Happy Wednesday and a very Merry Christmas to our listeners who celebrate. And I hope you, if you do not, I hope you have a restful couple days going forward. We are back in today. I am joined by Mark Wampler and Jared Shoemaker. We are going to sit down and talk a little bit about Blazing Sevens. And if you're wondering why, it's because the Broodmare's Homeroom Angel and Spellbook, and I'm pretty sure that it's confirmed that they're both going to Blazing Sevens, Mark?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. So they are confirmed as going to Blazing Sevens. And he,
as long as Jared got the contracts.
And contracts have been signed and submitted. We are set to pop.
Confirmed. Yeah.
There you go. So confirmed they're going to Good Magic. So we thought, let's sit down. Let's talk a little bit about this grade one winning son of Good Magic. And kind of just explain who he is to everybody, and then Mark will kind of give his impressions on him. And we thought, hey, let's drop it on Christmas, have a nice little Christmas episode for everybody to listen to while they're getting ready for the festivities. So let's go ahead and jump right into it. You know, Blazing Sevens, as I said earlier, was a grade one winning juvenile by Good Magic. He, at this point, I think a lot of places would consider there's a couple races that are considered like stallion making races, and I know the Met Mile for a fact is one of those, but also in recent years people have said that like the Champagne has become a stallion making race, considering it was won by sires like Complexity and Practical Joke and Uncle Mo and Scat Daddy. So that's extremely exciting. That's a pretty impressive thing to consider, that And winning grade ones is hard anyway, but even more so to do it as a juvenile, to be that good that quickly, and then just come back as a three-year-old. And I mean, it was a very impressive Preakness. It was a hard-fought second to National Treasure in that Preakness. To come back as a three-year-old, late, you know, middle of May, to kind of just continue to hold that grade one form into his three-year-old season is very impressive. So out of curiosity, more for myself, maybe also for some of our listeners who aren't quite as familiar in the complexities of coordinating the race record and the physical you see in front of you. When you are deciding on a stallion, especially a stallion that is not proven yet, Mark, do you very heavily take into consideration their race record, or do you more look at their pedigree and how they physically would set, you know, work with a mare that you're looking at?
Well, first of all, before you do any of that, you've got to understand the market for these stallions right now. And the first decision you've got to make when you're breeding is, am I breeding this horse as a racehorse, or am I breeding this horse to sell? Because how you will proceed from there is very different. We are not our primary goal is not to breed these as racehorses, but to breed them to sell, to make money with. So and when you're breeding for racehorses, it actually becomes a little bit simpler. You know, you're just looking for the best horse, you know, the best bloodlines, the best performances, that kind of thing. When you are breeding to make money, you have to really, it's not so much, and this is mistakes I've made and I've learned over the years. I don't focus on what I like, what I want. I try to interpret what the market wants, what they are looking for. So if you're breeding to make money, and what you want to do is you want to know the market. What are buyers looking for? And in general, what I find they are looking for is sexy, good sire lines. There's an old saying in Kentucky: if you wouldn't breed to the father, don't breed to the son. So if you've got a stallion prospect and you wouldn't breed to his father, you know, it makes it hard to breed to this stallion also. You know, I'm also looking for class and speed as a two-year-old. That's a big factor, because you know what the market wants is speed and precocity. So I'm looking for class and speed as a two-year-old, and I'm looking for, you know, the best of those bunch will take that speed and carry it over a route of ground in top class races as older as 3 year olds too. And obviously I'm looking for a good physical, and I've this is something I've kind of, has been more prominent in my thinking lately, is I really like to see a stallion that has a good sales record. Sometimes they're homebreds and they just never went through a sale, but because we are trying to make money with this horse as a yearling, I would really like to see this stallion having gone through a sale and sold for well into the six figures, you know, because at the end of the day, we're not breeding this horse to win the Derby, win any specific race. We want a horse whose father went to the yearling sales and sold really well, because that's what we want to do with this horse, and black kittens come from black cats. So those are some of the criteria I'm looking for, but you've also got to understand the market. When I started, you know, so many years ago, really what people wanted was proven sires. But somewhere along the line, you know, horses that just came out, horses that just got retired, it was a wait and see approach. I went to many a sales and, you know, people just, I don't want to know about these first crop sires. I got to see what they do first, before I'll buy one of them. So, but that has just done a 180 turn. And I think, you know, my philosophy is, or my thinking is, you know, sometime around Tappet, Into Mischief, where there were these, stallions getting retired at $10,000-$15,000, it wound up being the best sires in the world standing for six figures. In Tappet, Into Mischief, there's several others. That's kind of the spark that got it to where it's not proven. Now everybody wants the latest, sexiest sire that just got retired. And so nowadays, if you're focusing on making money, you're really looking at the young sires, because everybody is buying on potential right now. They want to catch the next Into Mischief. And so that's, you know, when we sat down to breed these two mares, that's the first place we started, was the new sires. Now, this has been going on long enough that the farms know about it. And so what has happened is, you know, maybe 5 years ago, you could still get good deals on these sires that just got retired. But now the farms know what's going on, and they've tacked on an extra $10,000-$15,000 to these new sires, and they've made it. I mean, they know what's going on, and they know where they can make money. So they jack up the prices on these new sires, and the thing is, you've got to be ready to pull the trigger on them, because these new sires will shut down in September or October. They'll be all sold out, so you got to get on it quick. So those are some of the things that you think of when you're breeding. You want, you know, you've got these criteria. You'd like to see them have sold well, has some speed and some class, that kind of thing. And, you know, it seems like nowadays for Pocket Ace and some other people I do some work for, I'm looking for young, just retired stallions. But finding one that's affordable is very difficult.
Well, and Good Magic seems to kind of very well fit that profile, or Good Magic. Well, yes, Good Magic and Blazing Sevens seems to very well fit that profile that you mentioned, where if you would breed to the sire, you would breed to the son. Well, in this case, you know, he is a son of Good Magic. Good Magic is a son of Curlin. Curlin is a son of Smart Strike. So there's just a lovely long line all the way back to Mr. Prospector of just stallions that you would absolutely breed to. So, you know, I can see that absolutely makes sense from that standpoint. So you went out to the farm. You saw Blazing Sevens in person. Kind of just give us some of your thoughts on him. You know, what did you see? What did you like about him when you saw him out there at Derby Dan?
Well, you know, one of the first things is he also fits the criteria of having gone through a sale and sold well. Mm-hmm. So I knew when I went to see him that he'd been accepted for the Fasig Tipton Saratoga sale, which is probably one of the most prestigious yearling sales, and you only go to that sale with your very best individuals.
That's a tough sale to get into.
It's a tough sale. It's probably the toughest sale to get into, and you know you can push it in Kentucky with an average well-bred, an average physical and well-bred, because a lot of times it doesn't cost you any more money to get them forwardly placed at Keeneland September. But you've got to really be tied on if you take one up to New York, because it costs you a lot, much more to sell your horse up there. So here's a horse that was accepted to that sale, went up there, he sold for $225,000. So this is, and that is at a time when Good Magic was just coming along. That might have been his weakest, one of his weakest years. I don't know if he even had runners yet in 21. So that was a really good price for a Good Magic at the time. So, obviously I'm hoping that what his sales history kind of matches up with what I saw, and it did. You know, he's got plenty of size, scope, strength, really good through his knees and ankles, a good mover. You know, he's one of those horses, he's a grade one winner. If you don't like him, the problem is with you. He is the definition of what you're looking for. So you kind of mold your eye to fit him. But you know, there was no surprises or mysteries. You know, sometimes I go out and see these horses and I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, what am I doing up here at the sales? You know, because this horse toes out and he's you know, sickle hawked or something like that. But this horse looked like he should look. He looked like a grade one winner. And so I was real happy with him physically.
Well, and so considering everything you told us earlier, you know, all the considerations that you have in mind when you go out to see these young stallions, and you're looking to read Homeroom Angel and Spellbook, do you want to just kind of give a quick little... Or however long you want it to be. Do you want to just give a rundown of why you thought he would be a good match for Homeroom Angel and Spellbook?
Yeah. To be honest with you, Patty, he is what you're looking for. He is good to go. He's gonna help just about any mare. And these are two good looking mares. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't a situation where one of the mares is small and I need a big stallion. And, you know, if he was on the small side, it wasn't going to work. We've got two good mares, you know, that we picked out, and they're good physicals, and he's got a good physical too. So there wasn't a lot of, to be honest with you, Spellbook, she needs this or she needs that, or Angel, she's, you know, slight on this and we need a stallion to match her up. They're just all three pretty athletic, potentially good sales horses. Why we did him for both, and the key to all this with Blazing Sevens is Darby Dan. They've made a really good move. I told you these farms have caught on to what's going on, and they're tacking $10,000-$15,000 onto these new sire stud fees. I believe this horse at any other farm would be retired at $25,000-$30,000. And he stands out head and shoulders on this crop of first crop of retired stallions as by far and away the best value. And what that has done, Darby Dan setting him at a stud fee he should be, they've created a ton of buzz about this horse. I got people calling me up saying, you got to go see Blazing Sevens. I'm using him. And these are people on the inside, the sharp money that I'm talking to. I go up there and I go to see him at Darby Dan, and prominent people in the industry are lined up to take a look at him. Everybody's telling them to go take a look at him. So he's really, I felt like the sharp money is on him. And you know, when I saw him, I knew he ticked off a lot of what we're looking for. It's this great value. I just want, you know, why not do him for both of them? Because to me, it's the best value for 12.5. he's the best value of any horse that got retired this year. And so let's get two of them. Let's go to both mares because everybody wants that potential, those newly retired stallions, and a lot of key people in the industry are going to want Blazing Sevens to do well because they've got money in on him. So I think that's only going to help him going forward.
Well, and for context, to kind of add to that, there's four Good Magics right now that are on the market. Blazing Sevens at Derby Dan for $12,500. Dornick at Spendthrift for $40,000. Mage, who retired a little earlier, but that is Dornick's brother, $25,000 at Airdrie. And then Muth, who went to Gainsway, is
$35,000.
Yeah. So,
yeah, and those are all young stallions. If they, you know, Good Magic is a young stallion, so yeah. It looks like he might be a sire of sires. But that's what I'm talking about. I think if Derby Dan was really smart, how they managed him and created, because of his stud fee, he stands out now, and they got people lining up to breed to him. And like I say, it's sharp people. It's people I've known for 20, 25 years who are key people in the industry, and now they're economically tied to Blazing Sevens and want him to do well. And I just think the value was exceptional. And I think had he been at just about any other farm, they would have, just because he's first year, they would have had him priced twice that, I think.
All right. That's quite, I mean, I feel like, you know, and we all, our listeners and our watchers have kind of been tuning in, and, you know, you're pretty well known. It's a pretty well, if it's a secret, it's a very poorly kept one, that you are our bloodstock master around here. So the fact that you speak so highly of him, I think, gives all of us a lot of reason to be very excited for the next year.
And a lot of this, like I say, with these breeding things, it's not so, I've learned over the years, I've made stands. I'll go out and see a stallion that's just retired, and I'll tell people, don't breed to him because he's just got horrible feet, or he's got this problem or that problem. But for the first couple of crops, they're selling for heaven and earth, you know, and they don't make it as stallions, and I was right. Technically, this horse isn't going to be a stallion, but Pocket Aces or some other people missed out on opportunities because the market, other people really liked this horse. And that's a lesson I've learned when breeding to try to make money. It's not so much, don't get in love with what you want and what you think is right. You really need to be able to interpret what other people want, because you're supplying a product for other people. And you really, it's not so much what you want, it's what these other people want. And when I saw the people I saw interested in Blazing Sevens, that was really a key to me too. There's going to be demand. If these people are breeding a lot of their mares, if they're believing in Blazing Sevens, and really, you know, he's very attractive, a good physical. He wouldn't have gotten into phase at Tipton August if he wasn't. But reading the tea leaves, I believe that he is going to be what the market wants.
Yeah, it is a bit like reading tea leaves, isn't it? It's like you gotta really, really work to figure it out sometimes.
But Blazing Sevens, he's fine. Just put a pin in that and stick it over here. What was more important was the people I saw involved in this thing and wound up about this thing. And that was as important, because that'll create demand as well. And that was as important as anything.
All right. Jaron, do you have anything to add on? I see you working diligently down there.
You know what? I'm listening, and you know, and Mark and I have talked a lot about this stuff before, so you know, I knew exactly what what was driving his decision on Blazing Sevens, and so I was tabulating our name votes, but I was also you know, as he was talking, it made me think about Drain the Clock. And at the yearling sales this year, I mean, or I guess it's the weanling sales. Yeah, when we saw the Drain the Clock. I mean, there, it was like a Drain the Clock every other horse that came through the ring, and everybody was gaga over him, you know? And it's just this, it kind of backs up what Mark's saying about these new young sires that everybody just wants a piece of. And, you know, we got Homer Mangel and Folda to Drain the Clock. So, I mean, it's, you know, it is definite shift, you know, that has happened in the market. And, you know, what Mark's talking about is exactly right. And I think he's right too. You know, Tappet's the, maybe the horse that started this all, you know, because you know, he'd come out standing for 12,500, and the next thing you know, man, they're just winning left and right, and everybody all of a sudden is trying to get stuff to him, and it just kind of, he kind of changed, I think it kind of changed the nature of people, the way people approach selecting stallions for sales. Selecting stallions, if you're breeding to race, it's a whole different game, like you said. But if you're breeding to sell, you got to look at it a whole, you know, in a completely different manner.
Yeah, I've been told there's a pretty, I wouldn't say a gaping disparity, because some of these stallions do have kind of proof to the pudding. Like there's a reason that they're retiring, and then there's a lot of buzz about him. But it's definitely a pretty noticeable disparity kind of between the commercial market for people who are only breeding to sell, and then maybe more of the racing end user kind of market geared areas, where it's like they want the Gunaveras, where the stallion ran forever, made $5 million, you know, was a cool little racehorse. They want the Kozans in Florida, where he's considered pretty good value, and like, you know, they're winning left and right. They want the Battalion Runner, who's, you know, and I'm using Florida as an example because that's kind of who's been on the news lately with several of their offspring. But it's like, so it you're right, it forms a little bit of a different kind of I guess feel to the sale when you're looking for one thing and then you're looking for something else.
Yeah.
So that's very interesting. So I think that wraps up pretty well on our
Thing I wanted to add, Patty, just something you mentioned earlier about the Champagne and the list of successful stars that have won that race. I have, there's an old saying, and I think it's an old English saying that where I heard it first, is the best milers make the best stallions.
Yeah.
And the Champagne is a mile race. And I think I'd heard that forever, but I didn't really know why the best milers make the best stallions. But I've thought about that, and I think that is true, because on a top class grade one mile race, you're going to have to run fast early and you're going to have to run fast late. It's like the 800 meters. If anybody's run track, it's like a long distance race, but you can't, there's no pace. There's, you got to go
break ever.
Yeah, you're going to have to run hard the whole entire way. And I think that's why, you know, at a mile and a quarter, you can lay back off the Derby hot pace and come with a big charge down that long stretch, you know. But in a mile grade one race for males, 9 times out of 10, it's going to take a horse that is putting out effort every single step of the way. And I think that's why the best milers make the best stallions.
Well, and I think and they even market on this, the success of the Met Mile as a stallion maker is kind of also plays into that too.
Well, like, that rule applies to any mile race,
yeah.
Any grade one mile race, you know, you know, a maiden or an allowance race, you know, who knows what you can get away with, but that level, graded stakes, grade one levels, you've almost always got a horse that can go 22, 23, 44, 45, you know, and still come home strong, you know?
Well, and just looking at kind of what Darby Dan has listed up about Blazing Sevens, one of the things that they even notate was his first start in 9 months was a one turn mile, and he won it and earned a 97 buyer figure. I would argue it's a little difficult maybe to put up a 97 buyer after 9 months away. But, you know, what do I know? But, I mean, yeah, he's pretty impressive. You know, speaking from my end, he was a TDN Rising Star after his debut victory. I actually wrote a little piece about him for the TDN. So I was very excited to see him get picked up by Darby Dan. I have a lot of respect for them and their operation. They've stood some of my favorite horses, so... So I'm very excited to see how he does going forward.
That's a good point, too. Over the years, they've really done a great job of identifying. There's so much competition over these stallion prospects. And Darby Dan isn't going to get – he's just a – you know, there's no knock against Darby Dan. There's just people with more money that are going to get the very best of the best, you know. But they have done a very good job of, it's kind of like Pocket Aces selecting inexpensive horses to become good racehorses. They've done a great job of getting, you know, value stallion prospects that make it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you both for joining me on your Christmas Eve, I guess, here. Best way to spend it, recording a podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
So thank you both for joining me in today. Do we have any final thoughts, or do we just want to give our Christmas wishes for the partners, since this will go live on Christmas Day? So do we want to just give some Christmas wishes to the partners and then head on out of here?
Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Holidays. Thank you so much for another great year.
If I'm going to wish for anything for the partners, it's going to be a great Christmas, happy holidays, whatever you celebrate, and let's get a grade one winner in 25.
All right. From your lips to God's ears, as the saying goes. So I will also echo that. Have a very Merry Christmas, everybody. Have very happy, very safe holidays. And since it is a Wednesday, I will add on, have a happy Wednesday, have a good Wednesday, make good choices, celebrate responsibly, and the podcast is out.